Welcome to Ad Exchanger Talks, the podcast devoted to examining the issues and trends in advertising and marketing technology that matter most to you.
LiveIntent helps brands connect to people across devices, channels, and platforms using the superpower of the email address. LiveIntent, whose platform business is made up of over 2,500 brand and publisher clients and reaches 250 million verified people monthly, constitutes one of the world's largest identity graphs. LiveIntent is helping its clients thrive in the new cookie-challenged era.
Hey everyone, this is Zach Rogers. I'm the executive editor of AdExchanger and your host. So B2B marketing, when I say those words, do you yawn a bit? Let me see if I can change your mood about it. B2B represents a remarkably large slice of the overall marketing pie, about $120 billion annually, compared with a total of maybe 1.5 to 2 trillion. So we're looking at 15% of the global marketing spend, give or take. And in B2B, the stakes are exponentially higher than in B2C marketing, with conversions in some industries worth millions of dollars, a single marketing conversion worth potentially billions of dollars in certain cases. The marketing cycles, as a result, are considerably longer, more complicated than consumer marketing. And the leading enterprise companies are, of course, among the largest and fastest growing companies in the world, and include, everyone from John Deere to Lockheed Martin, Google, HP, General Electric, UPS, Chevron, Accenture, WeWork, Slack, Adobe, Salesforce, and Microsoft, and Merkle. how do you like that transition? To talk about B2B, I'm delighted to welcome Michael McLaren to the studio. Michael is the Executive Global Group Director at Merkle, overseeing its B2B practice as well as its technology marketing practice. Prior to Merkle, Michael spent many years at McCann World Group, eventually becoming CEO of the CRM agency MRM McCann. Delighted to have him in the studio. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you very much, Zach. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. So let's talk a minute about you before we get into this topic. Where are you from originally?
Originally from Sydney, Australia, but came to New York relatively early in my career. So over the years, I've spent a lot of time in New York and sort of enjoy it. I live here now full time and it's...
And have for 20 years. We were just talking before we came on, Mike. Michael has lived in Singapore, Tokyo. Was it Tokyo in
Tokyo,
Japan?
Okay. Yes.
Sydney, obviously, in New York. And I was asking him which is the greatest city.
It's a simple answer, New York.
It's New York, yeah.
The other ones are good, including San Francisco, but right. There's only one New York.
And talk about your career, how you came up through agencies, mm-hmm. And what has sort of been the guiding principle in your work life?
Yeah, I mean, I started life actually at Unilever as an assistant brand manager and went through a very sort of robust graduate training program. So I learned the fundamentals of marketing very early.
With three P's and all that?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I learned some fundamentals of direct marketing. So it's interesting how the sort of full circle has turned. I sort of got exposed to the agency world fairly early, and I would go to meetings at the agency. And then when I was sort of heading back to my office, I was thinking to myself, they're having a lot more fun than I'm having. So I sort of did a bit of a detour. I joined an agency thinking it would be a year or 2 years of just getting the experience, and then I'd go back on the marketing track. Mm-hmm. And that was a long time ago now. Yeah, so I sort of just stayed. And then it's hard to believe now, but back in the day, the big tech companies were just starting to be advertising spenders. They had historically just basically let the product do the work. Mm. And so in the sort of mid-90s, there was this huge explosion of technology investment from the IBMs, if you remember the old blue letterbox campaign, and from Microsoft, the Start Me Up Windows 95 campaign, and they became mainstream advertisers. And I sort of veered my career towards technology, and I've had the opportunity to work on, you know, Intel, Microsoft, IBM, Dell Technologies. So I've really worked with some of the biggest tech brands. And through that, you learn a lot about B2B marketing because, you know, advertising is just really one layer of what is a much more complex marketing communications, you know, sort of toolkit. And as I've sort of my career has evolved, I've sort of lent more and more into the more tech-driven, data-driven marketing discipline as a function of working with some of these great clients. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that kind of led me to Merkle, if you like, because I had come across Merkle over the years and was always impressed with the advanced thinking they had around how data-driven marketing was going to change the game. And, you know, the opportunity to join them sort of presented itself, and it's been a fantastic three-year run. You know, we are, at the vanguard of helping clients use data and technology to build closer and closer relationships with their customers. And, you know, in B2B marketing, driving ROI and being able to demonstrate the effectiveness of your marketing efforts is absolutely critical. Hmm. And to do that requires data.
Gotcha. So. Yeah, but let me go back to something you said at the beginning, which was in the 90s, you observed these tech companies that had never advertised suddenly advertising and building brands and making investments in paid media. Today, we have a similar thing happening with some of the sort of web era companies that never advertised, Google, Facebook, now are compelled to do so. Does it feel similar?
It's a little bit of, you know, deja vu.
Yeah.
Part of it is just the natural cycle of how you build a business. So, you know, obviously I won't talk the funnel, but if the classic funnel, it was like you had an awareness, you know, sort of need to build awareness. Then you had some sort of, you drive interest, then you drive, you know, sort of conversion and trial and then loyalty. So you sort of narrow that funnel. And the pure .com businesses and the digital pure play businesses have sort of maxed out on their ability to connect the dots with customers that are familiar with them. Doing business with them under the sort of traditional or brand-driven way. Mm-hmm. So they really need to start adding that layer of awareness to a much broader audience to keep bringing in new users into that funnel. Mm-hmm. And so it's the same reason that Microsoft started doing mainstream advertising. It's just you fast forward, it's a different context, different market environment, but it's all about, you know, building brand awareness, having that latent brand awareness that's sitting in the back of a customer's mind. And, you know, in the absence of having done business with me, the only way you can do that is to do effective broad-scale marketing communications.
Sure, which is why most, you know, billions of people around the world are confused to see beautiful brand ads for GE and Intel and things they don't really buy.
Yeah.
Well, Intel's a bad example because that is a consumer branding campaign. But GE and the jet turbine or things like that. And yet there have always been big B2B brands that did that kind of advertising because, well, targeting wasn't as easy, I suppose.
Yeah, and also they're kind of trying to plant a flag. Like if you just take the GE innovation campaign, and we don't do it, so this is just me as a passive observer. I like what they're trying to do. They're trying to own this thought of we drive innovation. And, you know, we are relentless about driving innovation. Mm-hmm. And they're doing a big thought leadership layer, which I'm sure is heavily weighted around, you know, areas around DC and, you know, the belt and so on. So they're probably trying to filter that message to an appropriate thought leadership audience. Yeah. But in general, what they're trying to say is someone somewhere is going to get a contract put in front of them and it's going to say, we recommend GE as the partner for this particular solution. Mm-hmm. And somewhere in the back of their head, they're going to bring that innovation thought forward, even if it's subliminal, and they're going to sign off saying, yeah, they're the guys who really drive innovation. And I know that it seems a little, you know, sort of weird, but that's how it works.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that, right? I mean, it's a huge investment, but I think for certain businesses, owning that perceptual landscape and having that, you know, residual brand equity is incredibly important and powerful.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. All right, well, let's back up for a minute and talk a little bit more broadly about B2B. At the top of my intro, I mentioned that number, $120 billion investment. I got that from you before we went on mic. Could you talk a little bit about how much money is spent on B2B and marketing and where that money goes?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of different marketing communications elements that go into a classic B2B marketing, you know, spend. So increasingly, B2B marketing is becoming performance-driven. So search is a very important piece. programmatic is an important piece, display, digital display media, out of home remains an important piece. So in airports and in transit environments, as people are moving across, you know, countries and across to meetings, et cetera, they spend a lot of money on events still. Events typically comprise about 40 to 50% of the total marketing spend. So that one-to-one engagement is still very important in a lot of B2B categories. And then some B2B marketers spend money in broad-scale advertising, but typically, you know, a small percentage because A, it's expensive, and B, where they're really focusing their efforts is on media that is driving transactions. So really trying to, there was an old sort of debate that used to happen around brand or demand, like are you driving your brand or are you driving your demand? And, you know, we like to say that every cent should be in the service of both. You should be building your brand while driving demand and driving those transactions. So, and as more, and then the other channels are things like email, you know, obviously. .com, your .com site is very important. So optimizing your .com for search engines and making sure customers can find the information they're looking for. So that kind of upstream piece, the self-service piece, so where customers are trying to educate themselves using all the digital channels that they're, you know, and even third party, like getting.
And so that's where content and inbound marketing comes into play, as you want to reach somebody who's already in their research process.
Forrester have been tracking this, and they say that roughly 70% of a B2B purchase happens before a company identifies to a prospective supplier. So they're doing 70% of the purchase evaluation and the trial and the sort of qualification before they've even put their hand up and said, tell me more about your product. So that puts a huge burden on the company's ability to put the right content out in the digital ecosystem so that prospective customers can find it, it's easy to consume, it's logically ordered, and it's easily navigable. And I think more and more companies are recognizing that that upstream digital piece is just as important as the downstream transaction piece.
Does a lot of money get spent on the upstream part?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, sometimes it gets hidden in internal budgets. So it could be in a, you know, internal studio. So it's not always easy to decode how much money is going into these things. But you know, certainly search engine marketing is a very, like every B2B, not every, but the vast majority of B2B purchases start with some sort of search. So, you know, I'm going to buy a new cloud server solution. And so you're going to go in and do your research. You're going to sort of build out these keyword strings, go and, you know, sort of search the net to get information to bring back and do your evaluation. So you want to be part of that conversation as a marketer so that the minute that someone's searching for something that's relevant to a solution that you're selling, you want them to associate your content with that search. So it takes a lot of work. And then you want your website optimized so that when they hit a link, it goes straight to the relevant content. And ideally customized relevant content. So it's customized for what we
for
can,
that client even?
For or, that client.
So that's the account-based marketing idea, right?
Which that's the account. So
maybe that's a good thing to talk about for a minute.
So ABM, I mean, I think every B2B marketer has got to have an ABM program in place. Basically what it says is that you're going to try to target those accounts that are most likely to buy your solutions. And, you know, you typically have a target account list that you've put together, hopefully hand in hand with the sales organization, because it can't happen in isolation. It absolutely
has. That's what I think of when I think of ABM. I'm like, marketing working with sales.
Correct.
Is that too simplified?
No, it's not. Okay. It's absolutely. That's where it has to start. If it doesn't start there, it won't be successful. And then what you do is you try to use all the technology tools that are available today to target your message to the most sort of the highest prospective the highest potential prospective buyers. And so when someone's out doing searches or talking and connecting to third-party sites, they're leaving a digital breadcrumb trail. It's kind of, think of it as digital body language. And there's data sources out there today that can capture that data and give you a view of which companies are trending on searches that are relevant to your solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you try to focus your dollars against those companies, those URLs that are out there looking for content that's relevant to something that you're offering.
Okay.
And ideally what it does is it allows you to, first of all, not waste money spending on businesses that aren't even relevant to your solutions, mm-hmm. that have no interest, as it happens a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, improve the likelihood of conversion because you're getting to them at a point when they need that information most.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. We have a number of sort of new ideas
mm-hmm.
that are coming into the marketing world. ABM and B2B is one of them. Fairly new idea, yeah?
I mean, I think in truth it's probably been around 10 years, but it's hitting mainstream now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you have programmatic.
Programmatic is a media capability. So basically, you know, in the performance media world,
mm-hmm.
You know, this is where we're able to sort of collect data and close the loop, if you like. So if you do mm-hmm. search, you pay for, a set of keywords and you sort of, you pay on the basis of delivering traffic based mm-hmm. on that search, you know, and so it's performance-based because you're paying for what you get. And
right.
programmatic is one of those things. So programmatic is where you're running media through, a trading desk
mm-hmm.
and you're triggering through a set of targeting profiles. So whether it's demographic or whether it's firmographic data.
Mm-hmm.
And you're only paying for the impressions that you deliver through those trading desks, assuming there's no fraud.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which we won't get into that.
But, yeah, no, let's set that.
So programmatic is a growing part of the business. It's not the most sort of powerful. I mean,
yeah.
A great B2B marketing mix has to use all the tools at your disposal. You
mm-hmm.
know, if you think about it in a logical sort of flow, and I'll try to sort of lay it out. You do a search string, you bring people to your website, you've created relevant content. In a perfect world, it's personalized content.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, Michael, I know that you work at Merkle. I know that you're looking at this. Let me serve you content that's going to be most relevant. From that, you're now starting to pull them into a CRM nurture stream. So ideally, you're capturing some information, you know, my email address, ideally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Once you've got their email address, you're starting to look at the profile of the company and you're running algorithms on what is the most likely trigger that I can send this person that's going to get them to take the next action. You offer them a white paper. You show them some video content.
Mm-hmm.
You use all the tools at your disposal to pull them down to the next stage of engagement. So now they're consuming your content. Now they're kind of interested and then you want to pull them into the sales qualified process. So you want to pull them into your sales org and get them talking to either, depending on what your business model is, if it's third party, that's a different nurture stream. But, you want three actions pulling them into a transactional relationship.
Mm,
and
mm-hmm.
great B2B marketing uses all the tools. It uses search,
okay.
It uses email, it uses landing pages, it uses content, it uses third-party references, and it's got them all firing
mm-hmm.
to pull that candidate, that prospective buyer, into the purchase.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can mm-hmm. do it with minimum touches and minimum time and minimum friction,
mm-hmm.
then the chances right. are you're going to drive a great ROI.
Okay.
And that's the game.
Okay, terrific. And then in terms of effectiveness with this new set of best practices,
mm-hmm.
what have you observed about, ROI or?
Well, I mean, it's what we were talking about before we started. It's all about data.
Right.
Data is the fuel that drives the entire experience.
Okay, so, well, actually, hold that thought.
Okay.
Because that's what we're going to focus on for the next portion of this discussion. But first, we're going to hear from a sponsor. I'll be right back with Michael McLaren. Hi, and I'm back with Karel Cooper, SVP of Global Marketing, with our sponsor, Live Intent. How do you use the email address to support online identity?
Sure. So the email address has gone from solely being about sending and receiving email to being the key to identity. And so for publishers and brands, it's incredibly valuable to continue the conversation with their customers and help them understand more about their most engaged users.
All right. And what's next for LiveIntent?
A number of things, you know, since we've essentially over 10 years created this marketplace of over 2,500 brands and publishers that we work with, and really the only ones in the email channel doing what we do, we're supporting multiple sides of the marketplace. And so from a brand and advertising perspective, what we're seeing is more and more of our advertisers are starting to mimic what our publishers do. And what I mean by that is they're starting to invest in things like content creation to engage their users on a deeper level. From a publisher perspective, one of the trends that we are seeing is the people at publishers that are responsible for growth are now working with us and wanting our help to help them not only grow their subscribers and their audience, but to better understand their audience. And finally, from an onboarding perspective, as you know, we recently launched our onboarding business. And the reason why we did that is because we feel that the cookie apocalypse is coming soon. And we feel that, you know, the publishers and brands that have email as the jewel at the center of what they're doing and their strategy will be the ones to survive. And we're going to be here to help them.
All right, great. Thanks again for your support. And I'm back with Michael McLaren with Merkle. So we were just transitioning into a discussion of the role of data in the B2B marketing mix. So why don't you kick off there? How do you use data to drive performance?
That's a great topic. It's something I'm very passionate about. So data comes into play in many different ways. So I'll start with within the organization itself. In most organizations today, B2B organizations, there is data that exists in a variety of places, often not federated, often unstructured, and very difficult to, first of all, build a simple view of the customer, and secondly, to extract insights from that view. Mm. So there's a lot of heavy lifting required to clean up existing data silos that exist within most marketing organizations. So the nirvana of a B2B marketer is to have a single view of the customer. And what I mean by that is that customer X, every touch point that I have with my organization, whether it's through the sales organization, through the product marketing organization, through my website, through my call center, is coming in and getting collected in a structured manner so that I can look at the entire experience that that customer is having with my company. You know, I like to tell B2B marketers, think of yourself when you go to a Starbucks and when it's done really well, you know, the barista recognizes you. Mm. He or she knows what you like. They remember what you talked about yesterday. They ask you about what's going on in your day based on a conversation they had with you last week. These are simple human truths. And mm-hmm. you walk out of that Starbucks experience. And by the way, I don't manage Starbucks, so I just admire their customer service. Mm-hmm. But that highly personalized, highly contextual, highly relevant experience that you walk out getting exactly what you wanted and feeling good about the transaction, mm-hmm. bottle that up. And then look at what a B2B experience looks like. Mm-hmm. And I won't name names, but quite often the B2B market, the prospective customer is pounded with 12 different emails from the same organization, is exposed to 30 messages around content or around a solution that's not relevant to what they do. Mm-hmm. If they do pick up the phone, very often someone says, wait, where do you work? Who do you work for? So there's no mm-hmm. recognition. There's no historical kind of context about what's the relationship that this customer has had with my organization. And the typical experience is high on friction, high on pain, and not particularly satisfying.
Right. So that would be like the marketing automation email that you get repeatedly, and it's clearly part of some kind of program that's been written, and it's not, it doesn't feel natural.
Yeah, it's not personalized, yeah, sure. And usually it's irrelevant.
It's spam, basically.
Yeah, and it gets treated as such. So just bottle that experience and then think about how do you build that capability within my organization? And it all comes down to how well are you capturing the customer experience within, you know, across the various channels. Once you've built a federated database that is structured in a way that allows you to start looking at the pattern of engagement that these customers have, then you can start running algorithms across the top of that data to mm-hmm. understand what is that customer, based on this history, likely to do next?
Mm-hmm.
And what can I offer them that's going to be most relevant in that
right,
scenario?
Right. And this is where a company like Merkle really shines.
As
you have this
absolutely.
Long history managing data for your clients.
Right.
And let's just talk for a minute about Merkle and the available tool sets and technologies that are out there, because you guys have your own sort of technology assets and data assets. But then there are a lot of vendors that are also selling large stacks
geared to solve
for this, as well as point solutions and this whole new category of CDPs
yep.
and then DMPs, which we're all very familiar
yep.
with, which have now been integrated mm-hmm. into a lot of
the marketing stacks.
Clouds.
Yeah.
So can you talk about the tools that are necessary? Because you're talking about taking data, as you say, that's not federated, that's not standardized, cleaning it, standardizing it, and making it actionable. So, but you need some like human labor to do that.
You need a lot of technology does a lot of that lifting for you. But
okay.
The anchor of any great database is identity management. So the ability to recognize who that person is and bring the historical records and connect those dots. So
mm-hmm.
we have a strong identity practice that allows us to manage the identity flows. So once I've secured identity and I've got some PII, so let's call it email, and mm-hmm. I've got permission to market to those customers,
right.
then I can manage that identity and manage those flows over a period of time. Merkle helps do that.
Mm-hmm.
Merkle helps clients, you know, sort of create databases or manage databases in the cloud. We help integrate different technologies that are required to do the various marketing communication streams. So implementing the Adobe stack, deploying Salesforce, you know, et cetera. We are like a super-powered SI that mm-hmm. helps. And then we also run the marketing programs on top of those platforms. So we're able to build out the nurture stream, the
right.
CRM stream, et cetera, and build the content and build the offers and do the test and learn models.
Right.
And
so there's the implementation phase, the data
right.
cleaning phase. I imagine that could be a limited engagement, and then you have ongoing services.
Yeah, typically.
Do you do both, but.
We do.
Yeah.
We do. And then different clients will ask us to do different things.
Yeah.
You know, it's in any B2B environment, there's a myriad of technologies in play.
Right.
And every client has its own unique environment. So as a partner to clients, we need to be adept at managing all those different tools.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in B2B, the clouds are really starting to penetrate and, you know, create these end-to-end solutions. You know,
mm-hmm.
Adobe, I think, is a great example of a company that is expanding its capability set around audience management, targeting and media deployment, creative content distribution and management,
mm-hmm.
and also now with the sort of the purchase of Marketo, managing that automated marketing automation process as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
they're bringing
right.
it all together.
So Adobe is becoming more of a B2B company. Is that one way to read the Marketo acquisition?
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, they've got big plans across the board. So I'm not saying that they're pivoting
yeah.
to B2B.
They're not,
but
no, right.
They're
of
clearly
course, yeah.
making B2B a priority in their strategic focus.
Right, okay, got it.
And frankly, you know, what happens is when clients have made these big investments in these platforms, they can extract significant value from them
right.
By expanding how they use them. So if you connect
yeah.
an audience manager with an experience manager, and really sort of play that to its optimum capability,
mm-hmm.
you get a lot of value from that investment.
And you've been around for a little while, and
mm-hmm.
so you remember a time when clients really didn't want to think much about the marketing technology and they'd rather let agencies hold the paper on that.
Yeah.
And we hear a lot about now about how clients are way more involved.
All different clients are,
yeah.
are managing that process in different ways, depending on what skill sets they've got in-house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because it's not a no-brainer to manage these environments and to deploy them
mm.
and to, frankly, extract maximum value from them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when clients decide to, there's multiple models. We also have a hybrid model where we can embed people into the client organization.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're essentially working as a employee of the client, but they're our people embedded into those solutions. So
mm-hmm.
there's all different ways of doing it. It all comes down to what works best for the client. And in
right.
the marketing business, we have to be very flexible and nimble to help clients get the type of solutions they're looking for.
Understood. So are there clients where that don't have a DMP, like on the B2B side?
Yeah.
How common is it for you to encounter like a B2B brand that just doesn't have the data management tools that you think they need?
It's not uncommon.
Oh, okay.
In fact, it's probably more common than you think. I mean,
yeah.
And part of it is the marketing ecosystem has developed that allows the clients to outsource some of those things. So, you know, you can go out and, you know, LiveRamp. You're going to connect there, and that does a lot of that work. You don't need to build it in-house. Mm-hmm. In fact, it probably makes sense for very few clients to do that. Mm-hmm. I think what does make sense for clients to do, particularly in a world where privacy is an increasing, sort of concern, is to really look at their first-party data. First-party data is your most valuable asset. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and Merkel's been saying this for 30 years. Mm-hmm. Understanding what you've got and the customers you've got, and understanding, first of all, ensuring you've got the rights to market to those folks. Mm-hmm. So you've got the permissions in place and they've opted in. But secondly, really understanding how that customer is engaging with your company and the kind of customer experience, the experience they're getting out of that engagement, allows you to build that, you know, sort of repeat purchase, you know, that is so much more ROI in that than going out into the broad ecosystem and trying to pull, you know, new customers into the funnel.
Mm-hmm.
So really getting on top of your first party data and having that identity management function that I mentioned, that is super important. Mm-hmm. And every client really should be spending time on that. Having a tight relationship with sales as a marketing organization is critical, because quite often you'd be surprised they live in complete silos. Because the customer that went into Starbucks, the one I used, the example I used earlier, or the customer that's used Uber, right? Mm-hmm. Convenient, transformational, that sort of experience, that expectation is transferring into the B2B world. Customers expect it to be convenient. They expect you to give them information they're looking for. And if you're not, there's someone else out there who is, and they will jump. So you have a kind of a mandate to really think hard about how do you create a superior customer experience. And I'll give you a good example. You know, 5G technology is coming through. 5G is amazing in terms of what capabilities it enables. We know that more and more people are consuming video content at a rate, you know, like millennials, that's how they consume information. Mm-hmm. So if you go onto a classic B2B website, I mean, are they leveraging these technologies? Are they using video effectively and cost effectively? Are they using voice-assisted search effectively? Mm-hmm. You know, voices coming through. Are they testing it? You can't go to sleep. You have to keep looking at new technologies as they come on, recognize the customer has a high bar of expectations, and look at what makes sense for you to make the investments in to make a more seamless, frictionless engagement with your organization.
Okay, great. Well, you mentioned privacy.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take that one on. You know, we're living through this period where data-driven marketing and people-based marketing are now possible in a B2B environment. And you can link personal, individual data, user level data to a business profiles.
Mm-hmm.
And just as it happens, the privacy rears up and makes sort of compliance a much bigger and more difficult issue, and steals away certainly large amounts of audience data that were previously available for targeting. It reminds me of the movie Awakenings, the one with Robin Williams and a patient who wakes up, it's De Niro, after living his whole life in a coma.
Right.
And he has this brief window of experience of normal life before the drugs stop working and he subsides back into a stupor. Is that what B2B marketers have to look forward to with the rise of GDPR, privacy laws in the United States?
I mean,
browsers cracking down on just like a shrinkage of data.
Well, I mean, there's a number of issues that overlap here. I'm not sure if it's a pure awakening moment, but it's definitely a moment.
Okay.
You know, so first of all, there's significant penalties in play. So I think that's the first thing I'd say. And you're starting to see some major fines getting imposed on big organizations. So the table stakes are a lot higher than they were. And basically it's around, are you using the data that you have in a way that the customer wants you to use it? So, you know, the key is having the appropriate permissions to use that data, having customers accepted and agreed to your ability to be able to market to them based on that information. Once you've got that permission, then you're able to do the people-based marketing solutions we're talking about. But so many clients have got data sitting inside their data silos that those permissions don't exist. And so you're in a situation where, you know, and a lot of businesses have had to do that. They've had to go back out and remarket to clients, to sort of customers, to ensure that those permissions can get granted, or they're purging databases and they're starting from scratch, you know, and that's happening, you know, quite a bit. So I think that, you know, I'm not saying that you
it's
can
a pretty
do,
high stakes moment, right?
Deciding
whether you can manage, go back and get people to manage their account briefly enough, or at least learn long enough to opt in,
and I think,
and incentivizing them to do so.
I mean, you know,
in a meaningful way that they understand.
The Cambridge Analytica moment, where that data was being misused, I think is a wake up moment for every organization. There's that old expression: just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something. So, you know, every company needs to ask themselves those questions. And at the very least, if you can do something, then you better be sure that you've got the appropriate permissions to be able to do it. And I think, you know, the good part is, I like to think of marketing as a value exchange. So if I offer you something of value and you think it's what you need and you like it, you're going to give me something of value in return. It's a classic, you know, sort of give-get type of scenario. And I think most businesses and, frankly, individuals are more than happy to volunteer a certain amount of information in return for something that they think is of value to them. And they'll, you know, what the key for us is email. Like, that's obviously the universal identifier, business email, even better. And that constitutes PII, you know. So PII goes up a stack. So the highest level is kind of credit card data and, you know, so on, financial data, healthcare data. So, you know, there's a whole stack of PII that is out there, personal identifier information. And but there'll be some levels of PII, like email, that they'll be willing to give you in return for something that they value. And as long as you respect that value exchange and you're smart about how you're using that information, then, and you're not on-selling it to third parties that have no, you know, sort of connection to the exchange that's happened, I think those logic rules are the ones that every business needs to apply. And, you know, challenge yourself as a marketer. Am I offering value? Is this something that's of value to this customer? And if it is, what can I reasonably expect in return in exchange for the value that I'm offering them?
All right. Wonderful. Well, great discussion. We're going to leave it there. Thank you so much for coming in, Michael McClaren.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
It's great to meet with you, Zach.
And thank you, dear listener, for the value exchange that is your attention to this program. I appreciate it, and I'll see you next week.
This episode is sponsored by LiveIntent. Learn how LiveIntent connects brands to people across devices at liveintent.com. Produced by Bigfoot Music and Sound in New York City.